Our speaker this evening is Brother Robert Miller from Arkansas, and his subject is the Good Shepherd. And in connection with this, he has asked that we read from the 23rd Psalm, Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. We'll now ask our brother Robert to come forward.
Good evening, brothers, sisters, and friends. I'm real delighted to be here as a part of the young people. I'm so young that I just qualified for my first Social Security check this week. It was a very historic occasion. My wife asked me how much it was, and I said, I can't remember. But I could see the wheels turning. I've got a couple of things to say before I get started. Do y'all have an hourglass here? I like to use an hourglass to time myself. May not have one. I know the last time I used one, we ran out of sand. So it's probably best we don't have one. And then this morning I was up at the crack of dawn helping Brother Tommy Jasinowski pick grapefruit. And I worked real hard, and you know, I'm retired now and I'm not really used to that. And so later in the day we had a nice picnic lunch and we went back to their house, and Brother Tom Northey said, "Where's Robert?" And Tommy Jasinowski said, "Well, I think he went upstairs to look over his notes and he fell asleep, was taking a nap." And Tom said, "Well, my goodness, if he fell asleep, what are we in store for tonight?" So with that kind of intro, I don't know exactly what we're in store for, but I've got a pretty good idea. We are going to talk about the Good Shepherd. And actually, this this talk was prompted by a sister last summer down in Texas at the Bible school down there, came up and gave me an article and said I might enjoy reading it sometime. And it was an article that was in the Reader's Digest back in June of 1950. That's been, you know, some 54 years ago now. And I was really impressed as I got to reading this. First, it was very, very interesting just from a natural standpoint. And also, there are a lot of scriptural applications we can make of some of the observations that the writer put forth in the article. As I say, it came from the Reader's Digest. I have entitled it The Good Shepherd. The article itself was called The Basque Sheepherder and the Shepherd's Psalm. as you can see on the screen. And I thought, well, we probably ought to define what Basque is. In Basque, the Basque are a member of a race of people that live in the Pyrenees Mountains in South France and in northern Spain. And this fellow that was relating the account of this, what he called the Shepherd Psalm, his name is Fernando de Alfonso. He is a Basque herder. He was employed by one of the big Nevada sheep outfits. He was rated or reputed to be one of the best sheep rangers in the state, as well he should be, for there were at least 20 generations of Iberian shepherds who preceded him. So we could say that he came from a long line of sheep herders. But we'll find that De Alfonso is much more than a sheep herder. He is a patriarch of his guild, the traditions and secrets of which have been handed down from generation to generation, just as were those of the Damascus Steel Tempers and the other trade guilds of the pre-medieval age. And although Fernando de Alfonso had been absent from his homeland for some 30 years, he was still very full of the legends, the mysteries, and the religious fervor of his native hills. And the writer of this article goes on to say that he was sitting with him one night under clear, starry skies. His sheep were bedded down beside a pool of sparkling water. Now, they were not in a Holiday Inn. He goes on to tell us that as they were preparing to curl up in their blankets, Alfonso suddenly began a dissertation in a jargon of Greek and Basque. When he finished, the writer asked him, "Well, what did you just say?" His reply was, he began to quote in English the 23rd Psalm. And there on the desert, the writer learned the shepherd's literal interpretation of this beautiful poem. De Alfonso told him that David and his ancestors knew sheep and their ways very well. And David, in the 23rd Psalm, has translated a sheep's musing into very simple and beautiful words. This old shepherd said he daily repeated the psalm to himself, and it filled him with a reverence and deep respect for his calling as a sheep herder. Our guild, the guild that he belonged to, he said this guild takes this poem as a lodestone to guide us. It is our bulwark when the days are hot or stormy, when the nights are dark, and when wild animals surround our bands. And we know that we have a shepherd, and we know that our shepherd is indeed our bulwark, and his Father's words are our bulwark when the days are hot or stormy, when our nights may perhaps be dark, and when wild animals, at least in a figurative sense, may surround our bands. De Alfonso goes on to say, that many of the lines of the poem, of which the 23rd Psalm really is, are the statements of the simple requirements and the actual duties of a Holy Land shepherd, whether we're talking about today or whether we're talking about 6,000 years ago. As we examine this 23rd Psalm, we will find that each of the phrases in this psalm has a very well understood meaning for a Holy Land shepherd. And as we examine this, I hope to show that we also can draw a lot of spiritual strength and we can apply these phrases to our own individual lives. You know, in reality, we are all sheep, and we truly have a wonderful shepherd who will guide and direct us if we will but listen to him. The first phrase we want to consider That paper doesn't, it's not very transparent, is it? You can tell I'm a real high-tech operator. The first phrase we want to consider of this 23rd Psalm is, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." De Alfonso goes on to tell us that sheep instinctively know that before they have been folded for the night, the faithful shepherd has planned out their grazing for the morrow. And just as we each go to sleep at night, we also feel confident that our shepherd has planned out our life and our future days. The sheep know that the shepherd will take them to where there will be sufficient food for them to eat. It may be that he will take them back to the same range where they have been grazing, or it may be that he will take them to a new grazing ground. The important point is that these sheep have confidence in the shepherd, and they really do not worry about where the shepherd might take them. They know that his guidance has been good in the past, and they have faith in the future because they know that their shepherd always has their well-being in view. And we as sheep, we should have that same faith and confidence in our shepherd and realize that our shepherd also has our well-being in view. Now, I realize that quite often we may not interpret our well-being just as our shepherd will. Quite often, we may have to endure things that at the time we have to endure them, we might think to ourselves, well, just how is this contributing to our well-being? But just as the sheep, we have to realize that our shepherd is doing what is best for us. We know we are told that all things work together for well for those that love the Lord. And we should always rest confident in faith and have a sincere belief and faith that our shepherd certainly has our well-being in mind. We know that his guidance has been very good in the past, and we should have confidence that it will continue to be good in the future. The next phrase we want to consider, He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. Now we know from a natural standpoint that the shepherd is always looking out for green pastures for his flock. And you know there were several things that were brought out in this article that I had no idea about. You know, I know very little about sheep, although I live in an agricultural state. I am not real familiar with practices, and there are a few sheep in Arkansas, not really that many. We have a lot of old goats, but we don't have that many sheep. But it was interesting to me to find out, does anyone know about what time sheep begin grazing in the morning? Anyone care to hazard a guess? Well, if you want to be a sheep herder, you better listen to this. Sheep graze from about 3:30 in the morning until about 10 o'clock. Now, I know Lucas would love to get up at 3:30 in the morning and watch over a bunch of sheep grazing, because I know Kyle would. He thinks 3:30 only comes in the p.m. He doesn't realize. But one of these days he'll find out. There's several of you here that, well, myself, you know, I used to get up at 3:30 in the morning when we had two lovely children. But thank goodness those days are over. I mean, they're still lovely children, but we don't have to get up at 3:30 in the morning. There's several of you here in the audience that are very familiar with that routine, and more power to you. But sheep graze from around 3:30 in the morning until about 10 o'clock. So they, you know, I thought we ate a long time out at Tommy's today, but we didn't eat near that long. I don't think Tommy ate for over an hour and a half. So, you know, that's not quite 6.5 hours. But after the sheep eat for this 6-hour period, they will lie down for about 3 or 4 hours and rest. They, they eat, their belly's full, and they, you know how you get when you eat, your belly's full, and you get kind of drowsy, and, you know, it's real easy to fall off and sleep a while. Now, this is what's interesting, though, and some of y'all, and myself included, we need to think about this when on Sunday after meeting we go home and have a big meal, then we won't take a nap. It says, when they are laying down and resting, they are contentedly chewing their cuds, and the shepherd really delights in this because he knows when they're doing this, they're putting on fat. So, you know, when I read that, I thought, well, maybe it's not such a good idea to have that Sunday afternoon nap. But maybe it's probably all right if we don't eat quite so much. But anyway, the shepherd, not only are the sheep content, but he's very content too because he knows they are putting on fat. Now, consequently, the shepherd, he starts his flocks out in the early morning on the rougher herbage, And then he moves on through the morning to the richer, sweeter grasses. And finally, he comes with his flock of sheep to a shady place where the flock rests in fine green pastures for the best grazing of the day. And sheep, while resting in such happy surroundings, feel contentment. And you know, when we think about the sheep chewing their cuds, you know, in a sense, we can chew the cud as it relates to God's Word. When we are meditating upon God's Word or ruminating upon God's Word, in effect, we are, in a spiritual sense, we are chewing the cud. And as the sheep, while they are resting in such happy surroundings, find contentment, we also can find contentment as we consider God's Word, as we ruminate upon God's Word. And spiritually, we are chewing the cud. The next phrase we want to consider, He leadeth me beside the still waters. Now, this is another interesting fact that I found out. D. Alfonso goes on to tell us that every shepherd knows that sheep will not drink gurgling water. Water has to be very still before sheep will drink from it. We know that there are many small springs high in the hills of the Holy Land whose waters run down to the valleys only to evaporate in the desert sun. And although the sheep need water, they will not drink from these fast-flowing streams. The water has to be still before they will drink from it. This reminds us of the admonition we find in the Bible where we are told to be still and learn from God or know of God. You know, we really have to kind of get away from the pressures of everyday life. We have to get off in quiet surroundings before we can really read and meditate upon God's Word. Now, the shepherd, in these situations, when the sheep need water, but all he's around is a fast-flowing stream, the shepherd either has to find a place where rocks or erosion have made a little pool, or else he will take his hands and he will fashion a little pocket sufficient to hold at least a bucket full of water, and then he will let each of the sheep drink from this. But a sheep will not drink from gurgling water or swift moving water. I thought that was very interesting. And I think too we realize that we only can concentrate or meditate upon God's Word when we get into somewhat still and quiet and peaceful conditions. The next phrase we would like to consider, He restoreth my soul, He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for His name's sake. This is very interesting. In fact, this next little section we're going to talk about is a very beautiful section. And I want to put up on the screen another overhead, because the writer of the article says that the Holy Land sheep exceed in herding instinct the Spanish Merino or the French Rambouillet. Those are two other breeds of sheep. It's very interesting. First, I'm going to put up a little bit about the Merino sheep that we mentioned a while ago. Can everyone see that okay? We're told that the Merino is the oldest established breed of sheep in the world. And they are named after a nomadic Berber tribe of North Africa who brought them to Spain in the 12th century. The Merino is a medium-sized sheep, a good forager, hardy and able to withstand drought. And also, I know we've got some real close horses in the audience, like Murray Chisholm and Jim Taggart. And when I was flying down here the other day, I was reading in a magazine and I was thinking about what I was going to talk about. And I saw an ad in here for some real nice, fashionable men's clothes. And I tore it out of the magazine because I wanted to give it to Brother Jim Taggart. And one of the fellow that was interviewing this fellow, who is supposed to be a real fashion expert, he asked him a question. He said, "Give me an example of how you might pack for a business trip yourself." And the reason I'm reading this little excerpt is because the Merino sheep, they're known for their very fine wool. And he goes on to say, "I generally pack light, and unless I'm traveling overseas, a carry-on will do. I always take a dark suit, several white and striped dress shirts, a few lightweight Merino wool t-shirts." And that's the reason I wanted to read that, because this fashion expert was describing what his idea of an ideal wardrobe would be, and he mentioned a few lightweight Merino wool t-shirts. So the Merino sheep is well known for their wool, among other things. The other sheep we mentioned was the French Rambouillet breed. We find of them, they are actually a French version of the Merino breed of sheep. They are a range sheep, and they have an ability to survive in very harsh conditions. They tend to be long-lived, and they're a little more prolific than the Merino. Now, that's really all we want to say about those, but I wanted to give you just a little background on those two breed of sheep, because he said that the Holy Land sheep, and he's talking specifically, I think, of the sheep that we would find in Israel in the immediate area there. And this was very interesting. I was doing a little research, and I got on the internet and I found out that information about the Merino and the Rambouillet sheep. And so he hadn't mentioned a particular breed of what he was calling the Holy Land sheep. So I got on the internet and I went to a site where it was a sheep growers association. And they had a list of all the breeds of sheep. And I looked down there, and lo and behold, there's a breed of sheep called the Jacob sheep. And I thought, I'll bet you that's a Jewish sheep. Well, it was very interesting to see what they said about the Jacob breed of sheep. They said that the Jacob is a breed of sheep that is said to be descended from the sheep that Jacob tended for Laban in the Old Testament. And we all remember the account of Jacob tending for sheep for Laban, and we remember how Jacob accumulated a lot of sheep while he was doing this, and some may have questioned the method in which he did this, but we know that God was with Jacob and he had him in mind for a very special purpose. But anyway, we know that Jacob tended sheep for Laban, and the Jacob breed is said to have descended from the sheep that Jacob tended for Laban in the Old Testament. It went on to say that it is one of the oldest breeds in the world. And this was very interesting. They say the Jacob sheep have 4 or 6 horns and they are multicolored. But the point the writer was making, that the, as he says, the Holy Land sheep, they have a better herding instinct than either the Spanish Merino or the French Rambouillet breed of sheep. Now this is amazing to consider what I'm going to say now. He tells us that each of the sheep takes his place in the grazing line in the morning and keeps the same position throughout the day. Now just think about that. If we were to line all of you people up, single file, and said we're going to have a meal, we're all going to go in there in the order in which we're lined up. Now, how long do you think it would be before someone would get out of line? I mean, do you think that line would remain intact till the first, second, third, fourth, blah, 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 all the way down to the last person got their meal with everybody staying right in the same order? I've got a lot of confidence in you people, but I just feel like that a few of you would probably get out of line or try to get ahead of someone. Now, am I being unfair when I say that? I know Brother Eldon Washick would agree with that, because he would probably be one of the ones trying to get to the front of the line. But anyway, this is amazing, and this, I think this shows how well-disciplined a flock of sheep are and how much love and respect they have for their shepherd. Now, as I say, these sheep, they take their place in the grazing line. They keep that same position throughout the day. But one time during the day, each sheep, be it little or big, they leave their place and they go to the shepherd. Now, just envision this. The sheep gets out of line and walks over to the shepherd. The shepherd stretches out his hand as the sheep approaches with expectant eyes and mild little baas or whatever they do. I'm not going to illustrate that. Okay, so the sheep comes up to the shepherd. The shepherd stretches out his hands. The sheep's got an expectant look in his eyes. And he baas a little bit. He's happy to see the shepherd. The shepherd rubs the nose and the ears of the sheep. He scratches his little chin. He whispers affectionately into its ears. And while the shepherd's doing this, the sheep rubs against the shepherd's leg, or if the shepherd is sitting down, the sheep will nibble at his ear and rub its cheek against his face. It's kind of like when a grandfather picks up a little granddaughter or a little grandson, or a grandmother picks up a little granddaughter or a grandson, and they put it in their lap, and there's a real display of affection shown between the grandparent and the grandchild. And then after this goes on for a few minutes, the shepherd releases the sheep and it returns to its place in the line. It doesn't go to the front or to the rear. It goes right back to its place. So you parents, I want you to teach your children to do that when the grandparents call one of those kids over to love them. Teach that child to go sit down right where they were when they came over to see the grandparent. I know if sheep can do it, you can do it. But that's really amazing when you think about it. And it shows the tremendous love and respect between the shepherd and his sheep. And we know that certainly our shepherd is a very loving shepherd. He is always concerned for our well-being, and he is willing to commune with us, and we should always take advantage of that fact. The next phrase we want to consider . Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Here again, there were some very interesting facts brought out in this section of the article. The old sheep herder goes on to tell us there is an actual valley of the shadow of death in Palestine. And he says that every sheep herder from Spain to Dalmatia knows of it. He said it is south of the Jericho Road leading from Jerusalem to the Dead Sea. And it's a narrow defile through a mountain range. So there actually is a valley of the shadow of death. And because of climatic and grazing conditions, it is necessary for the sheep to be moved through this valley each year. Now I want you to envision this valley and just think about how treacherous it would be. We're told that the valley is some 4.5 miles long. Its sidewalls are over 15 feet high in places. So we've got a valley that extends for 4.5 miles. The walls on the side, some of them are over 1,500 feet high in places. And the path along which the sheep have to pass is only 10 or 12 feet wide at the bottom. So we've got a little narrow path, 10 or 12 feet wide, for for 4.5 miles, and we've got walls on the side. Some of them are more than 1,500 feet high. Now, travel through this valley is very dangerous because the floor or the path has been badly eroded by cloudburst, and it has gullies in some places 7 or 8 feet deep. And the actual footing on the solid rock along this path is so narrow in many places that a sheep cannot turn around. In other words, it's so narrow that a sheep has to only go one direction. If he's headed that way, he's got to continue till he gets to the end because there's not room enough to turn around. And they have an unwritten rule or law, and you think about this is very practical. The shepherds all know that they have a law or an unwritten rule that their flocks of sheep must go up the valley in the morning hours, and they come down toward eventide, or as the day begins to wane. They go up in the morning, they come down in the evening. Otherwise, if you had one flock going up and one coming down, and they met in the middle somewhere, there wouldn't be room to turn around. And while sheep are very obedient animals, they don't particularly like to walk backwards. So they have to go up in the morning and come down in the evening. And he goes on to tell us that mules, and we know that mules are pretty sure-footed animals, they have not been able to make this trip for centuries, but we know that sheep and goat herders from the earliest of Old Testament days have maintained a passage through this valley of the shadow of death for their flocks. And this gets a lot more interesting. We're told that about halfway through the valley, the path or the walk crosses from one side to the other, where the path is cut in two by an 8-foot gully. So you're coming along, you come to an 8-foot gully, you've got to get over that gully to get to the path on the other side. Now, we're told that one section of this path is about 18 inches higher than the other. In other words, it's about like that. You've got one path here and you got another path down here, 18 inches below it. The sheep have to jump across this if they're going to continue on their journey. Now, the shepherd, he stands where this break occurs, and he has to coax or sometimes force the sheep to make this leap. I mean, they literally have to leap from one point, depending on whether they're going up or coming down. They either have to leap 18 inches up or leap 18 inches down. Now, you think about this. If a sheep makes this leap and they have to make it, the shepherd either coaxes them to do it or he may have to force them to do it. But if they jump and let's say they slip and they land in the gully, and remember the gully is, what did we say, about 8 feet deep. That's when the shepherd's rod is brought into play. The old style crook, if he has that type of rod, he takes that crook and if it's a large sheep, he puts it around its neck. If it's a small sheep, he puts that crook around the sheep's chest and he has to lift it up to safety. Now, if a more modern narrow crook is used, think about this. It says the sheep is caught about the hooves and lifted up to the walk. So this shepherd has to be pretty good to be able to retrieve a sheep that has slipped and fell down into that gully. And what's really makes this important is that along this path and in these gullies, there are many wild dogs that are just lurking there looking for prey. And certainly if a sheep happens to fall down into that gully, there may be a wild dog right there to gobble him up or gobble her up. So the shepherd has to be aware of that also. There's very few times that the shepherd is not very, very concerned about the safety of the sheep. And we know that our shepherd is very concerned, particularly with our spiritual safety. Now, once the sheep enter this valley, the shepherd may come up on a dog. You know, he may be out in front of them and he'll come up on a dog waiting for something to come by where the dog can get a meal. And quite often the leader of the sheep that's in the lead, will come up on such a dog. And you remember we said the place was so narrow, the sheep couldn't turn around. Well, when they come up on a dog, a sheep will, you know, let out a baa and warn the other sheep, there's a dog there. Well, the shepherd hears this, and he is very skilled at throwing his staff. He throws it at the dog. He knocks the dog down into the washed-out gully, and then he runs over there and kills it real quick. So literally, these sheep have learned to fear no evil, even in the shadow of death, for their master is there to aid them and protect them from harm. And as brothers and sisters of Christ, as the sheep of our shepherd, and we know that our shepherd, again, is Jesus Christ, we know that he is always available to aid and protect us from spiritual harm if we are willing to do what he asks us to do. The next phrase we want to use Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. D'Alfonso goes on to tell us that David's meaning of this verse is a very simple one. If conditions on the Holy Land sheep ranges are known, he tells us that poisonous plants abound and these plants are fatal to grazing animals. And particularly in the spring, the shepherd always has to be on the alert for these poisonous plants. When he finds these plants, he has an instrument. He calls it a mattock, and I guess it would be kind of like what we would probably call a grubbing hoe. He takes this and he gets out in front of the flock and he grubs out all of these plants, these poisonous plants that he recognizes, and he gets them up, the stock of the plant and also the root. Now, as he digs these out, he puts them upon little stone pyres, as they call them. It's kind of like a little, almost like a little altar, although it doesn't really have that connotation. But a lot of these that they have over there, they say, were built by shepherds back in Old Testament times. And then he piles them on these things and then leaves them there, and by within a day or two, they are dry enough to burn. And he burns them. And in the meantime, the shepherd leads the sheep into this newly prepared pasture, which is now free of poisonous plants. And in the presence of their deadly plant enemies, the sheep now eat in peace. And we realize, too, that our shepherd certainly will take care of us. And he does indeed, as we are told, prepare a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. The next phrase, thou anointest my head with oil, my cup runneth over. Now this is also something that we really need to visualize, and there's some very beautiful thoughts expressed here. We're told that at every sheepfold, there is a big earthen bowl of olive oil and a large stone jar of water. Now, as the sheep come in for the night before they are bedded down, they are led to a gate. Now, I want you to think about this. As they're led to the gate, the shepherd has his rod, and he lays his rod across the top of the gateway just higher than the backs of his sheep. So you have the sheep, and they're coming through this gate, and the shepherd has his rod there, and a sheep passes through. And of course, the shepherd has a very well-trained eye, and he's looking, and he can examine a sheep very quickly. And if he finds a sheep that perhaps has briars in its ears, or snags in its cheek, or if it's watering around the eyes, either from dust or from scratches, he will gently drop the rod across the sheep's back, and the sheep will step out of line. So you've got a bunch of sheep coming through a gate, and the shepherd's there with his rod, and he looks over each one as they come, and if they're weeping around the eyes, or if they've got a torn ear or a briar stuck, he will just gently tap them on the back with that rod, and they'll step out of line and come over to him. And what he does then, he takes care of that sheep and he cleans any wounds it has. He's very careful with it. And then he dips his hand into this big jar or bowl of olive oil, and he anoints the injury. In other words, he rubs that olive oil around it, and it, you know, to clean it up and help protect the sheep. And then, after he's done that, he takes a big cup he's got, and he dips it into that big earthen bowl or jar of water we talked about. And of course, that water is usually kept cool because it's in a big stone jar, and he brings that cup of water out. He never brings it out half full. It's always full or overflowing. And then that sheep will sink its nose into that cup, and it will drink the water. And if the sheep is fevered, if it's maybe watering around the eyes, It may well have a fever, and it quite often that sheep will dip his head all the way down and get that water up around the eyes to get them to feel better, and then they will drink until they're fully refreshed. And, I mean, you just think about that. Here's a bunch of sheep coming through a gate. Here's the shepherd. He's got a rod. He looks at them as they come, and he spots one, and he just gently puts that rod on that sheep's back, and the little, or it could be a big sheep, just gets out of line, comes over to him, and he takes care of it. Now, when the sheep are all taken care of and they're at rest, then the shepherd will lay his staff on the ground, but he's always got it where it's easily within reach, because quite often he may need it to protect the flock during the night. You know, there may, wild animals may come around, or anything could happen, but he's always there with that staff within reach. He wraps himself up in this heavy woolen robe, and he lies down, and he is always facing the sheep, so that he, if he hears something, he will wake up instantly, and he will always be facing the sheep where he can see what the danger of the problem might be, and he can jump up with his staff and protect the sheep. Well, we know that the concluding verse of this psalm, "His surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever." Now, we know that after all the care and all the protection that the shepherd has provided for his sheep, a sheep may well soliloquize in the twilight, and as the words are translated by David, the sheep may well think, as we should think, if we really have faith in our shepherd, that surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. So to conclude tonight, I would admonish each of us that as we continue our walk through our valley of the shadow of death, let us also fear no evil. We truly have the Good Shepherd watching over us, and may it be our happy lot to dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Thank you.